Brian Taylor joins us now live. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, buddy. How are you? Good to talk to you, and thanks for the nice intro there.
You got it. You were there for the Masters, and it was interesting for sure. A lot of things to dig into. Just first of all, I just want to get your overall reaction to the tournament as a whole and what Scottie Scheffler was able to accomplish over the weekend.
I'll tell you what's tough about what Scottie Scheffler did. When you are the number one player in the world, when you're the odds-on favorite to win the tournament, and then to go out and deliver, I think that's one of the toughest things to do in anything, right? When you're the front runner and be the front runner and deal with the pressure and then be able to go out and perform like you're expected to live up to the expectations. I think that's one of the most admirable things and the funnest things to watch. I mean, Tiger was obviously the master at it, right? He did it so many times that we used to discuss, do you take Tiger or the field this year at Augusta? And I'm not ready to go with Scottie Scheffler or the field. DJ asked me that earlier in the week, and I guess I should have, but he's starting to prove that he is that guy. And I mean, right now he's hitting on all cylinders. He was top 10 in greens, fairways, putts, which is just a rare thing to see happen there. He did it with, you know, birdies. He did make one eagle. He made the double bogey. I mean, he kind of was, you know, whenever he got down, he bounced back. And then on Sunday, it was one of those kind of rounds where he was just in a class all by himself, and he made everybody press on a golf course that was already put on the edge. And when they did that, they found balls in the water. You know, Morikawa and all the chasers were finding the water on 11, and he just went about making pars and birdies and extending that lead. So what he did was impressive, and he's, I think, the second youngest to get two wins at the Masters, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. He joins exclusive company, one of 18 golfers all time to win multiple Masters. He's got everything you were looking for in a dominant golfer. What I really was fascinated with was you're watching Sunday in the final round, Brian, and it's all even. You got three guys at 7-under. You got Morikawa right there, Oberg, who I want to get to in a minute, and then Scheffler at 7-under. And all of a sudden, the back nine, everybody fades. Oberg kept it a little bit close, but Scheffler just found another level of play. How was he able to do that?
You know, that is it's a really good question. And it felt like, you know, maybe the only one that could try to hang with him was Oberg. You know, I mean, the guy, he's like, maybe it's going to take a kid, you know, to come out here and try to wreck this thing because everybody else is trying too hard and he didn't really know any better. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that I learned from Scottie is he's found some ability. And if you listen to his comments, he's very consistent with this. He's found the ability to stay in the present. And he doesn't allow himself to dwell on the past or to get too ahead of himself for results. And everybody can say that, right? Well, it's just one shot at a time, blah, blah, blah. But he literally is dialed in. And I've heard the question asked to him just this week, probably a dozen different ways. And he won't allow himself to kind of go there. But what I did hear him say that he did admit was that he really wants to win. He wants to win really badly. In fact, so badly, he said he wished he didn't want to win so badly. And then the second thing is that he hates losing, and he hates to shoot over par, and he hates making bogeys. And that's a little bit different, right? I mean, you know, Stevenson can probably talk about that the difference between loving to win and hating to lose, those are different things, but they're also very, very motivating and powerful things. So I just was impressed at his, you know, some people say, I wish he just had a little bit more pizzazz, or I wish he had a little bit more flair, you know, that he was a little more entertaining. He's kind of boring. But I think if you're watching somebody make it look easy, it is kind of boring that way. And not everybody has the showmanship of a Tiger Woods. I think that's why he's kind of a once in a generation type guy. But right. You know, Scottie, to me, for golf fans, I think is really fun to watch. He just isn't quite as flashy as maybe some of the other guys. But that mindset that he had, I think, is on a different level right now. His preparation, and so I think that's why he was able to separate himself.
Yeah, bro, I always had that kind of inclination of like what is that process? Because do I take advantage of being a personality, right? How do I throw that on top of what am I doing? Or do I just lock into what I'm doing and just be great that way, right? There's been some silent killers in all kinds of sports like that. And then there's been some over-the-top, really flashy, you know, dominant people over there. How do you find that balance? And is that balance something that you do in golf?
Yeah, I think it's a great, right? I mean, Muhammad Ali was as flashy as they get, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard. And then there was, you know, other guys that just, you know, were locked down, stay close to their business and handle their job as if they, you know, Walter Payton comes to mind, you know, just act like you've been there before. And so here's the challenge. And I, on a high school level, I played, you know, football, basketball, baseball, golf. But in golf, it's a 5-hour period of time. You know, it feels like you could get easy. You make a sack on a quarterback, you score a touchdown, and you can just celebrate. You can jump and high five, and you can just really, and then you can kind of chill and let it go, and you go on to the next play. For these guys, it's like, you know, you've got to sometimes sit there for 5-10 minutes with really nothing going on, you know, or you're just walking alone with your thoughts. Right. And I just think that's why I think golf is that ultimate mental test, because you don't have the fans necessarily to feed off sometimes, but most of it is just the thoughts within your head that you have to control. And it's fascinating. I think that's why these guys all have mental coaches and things that they have to deal with out there.
I think this is an interesting topic about, you know, how flashy, how entertaining does your top player need to be? Brian, I'm looking at, you know, I'm a TV guy, so I've got the ratings, and they were down 20% in the final round from last year. Mm. That is a problem for the game of golf. So how do you balance that? I think the answer probably is Scheffler needs a worthy challenger that maybe has some of that. What does golf need to do to kind of make things a little bit more interesting with this situation, I guess, that we've been talking about?
Yeah, you know, I did see that same thing. 20% is a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the TV business, son. All of a sudden, you go
2.5%. 2.5 million down. It was 12 million last year, 9.5 this year. That's a big chunk.
It's a big chunk. And one of the storylines coming into it was, what's the fan fatigue right now? When it comes to LIV and the fracturing of professional golf, you know, with stars being on both sides and, you know, all this money talk and, you know, things of that nature, where is the fan in all of this? And we've seen ratings on the PGA Tour that have been down this year. And so quickly the LIV company will use that as ammunition to suggest that they're all going over to LIV to watch their stars, that it's a superior product now, and that they're finding that the PGA Tour as it sits is boring. But there's zero ratings for for LIV.
So nobody's that watching that either.
That doesn't really. That's right. So I do think there is a little bit. You know, I remember when over the years when we've had lockouts or we've had different things like that. You know, one of the things that I quickly learned is, when millionaires are fighting with billionaires over billions of dollars, that doesn't really attract the everyman. And that's unfortunately been the narrative over the last 2 or 3 years with professional golf. I always appreciated that we were in professional golf was a little bit exempt from that, because one of the things I love about it is the meritocracy, the earn what you get. And I get it. Like the top players, they're in all these events with guaranteed money, no cuts. That plays along with it, but you have to get to that spot. I love that if you play good on a weekend, you can change your life. If you play poorly, doesn't matter if you're Tiger Woods, he never missed cuts, right? But whoever it is, missed cuts, you don't get paid. And so I love that about the game, and it's unfortunate, in my opinion, that it's gotten to this place. And I think the ratings are suggesting that the fans are feeling that as well. I'm not pinning it on the Masters. I'm not pinning it on Scottie Scheffler. I think this is a trickle-down effect from the fracturing that has taken place in this game.
Tony Finau, I know you had a chance to chat with him after his final round. Did not go the way he wanted to in Augusta. How's he feeling? How's his confidence moving forward?
You know, if you heard that little 2 minutes we had with him, he was gracious. And, you know, he was, I think the comments that he made is that he was, that he takes gratitude away every time he plays. But also he said, I have to maintain that belief that I can win majors. And he even stopped and said, and emphasized multiple. And so, you know, he's always had that self-belief and that self-confidence. And I guess that's what you have to take. And I asked him if he learned anything. He goes, I don't know if I'm going to take anything away from this. And he said, really bad, really not good round, yeah. I think is what he said. I think there were a few choice words floating around in his mind that he didn't want to use. But, I mean, he shot 80, which is his highest round at the Masters. It wasn't a good week for him. You know, he just wasn't able to dial it in. He struggled with the high winds like a lot of the players did. And you know, I don't know what it's going to take for Tony. I'm in his camp. I do believe that he has the game for this. I do think he was a legit guy to look at going into the Masters, and I'll look at him going into next year as well. And we'll talk about him coming into Valhalla for the PGA Championship here in a little bit, another big golf course. So, you know, there's just something that he's got to dial in, just got to get a little tighter. Wedges weren't quite as sharp as probably they needed to be. His approach shots maybe not quite as sharp. His putting actually wasn't horrible. He did miss a few shorties that he could have made, but overall it wasn't terrible. Drove the ball fairly well. So I just think he's just needs to sharpen up just a little bit, and I love that he was still feeling that positive vibe because, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to get down after something like that when you expect to be a contender and you expect to be, you know, you've played in the final group before. It's tough to kind of be there in the middle of the pack and not really playing for anything but crystal.
A lot of golf ahead for Tony. His day's coming. He's going to win a major and probably win a Masters, and look forward to that happening. Tiger Woods also struggling. Everybody wants to hear about Tiger. Everyone follows Tiger, even at this point in his career. It was the worst round of his career, worst tournament of his career. What is a realistic expectation we should have for Tiger Woods at this point in his career?
It's really hard to see him last, you know, 60th out of 60 players that made the cut,
right,
and played the weekend, and being at 16 over par, you know, shooting 82-77 on the weekend. You know, I actually thought from a year ago, he looked terrible. I mean, physically, he just looked like he'd be lucky to put one foot in front of the other, let alone on that golf course, which is, you know, nine miles around that place. And it's all on a side hill, uphill, downhill, and everything that you could imagine with a fused ankle and back and, you know, all the mess that he's gone through physically. So it does put a lot on him, but I thought he actually moved fairly well. The golf swing has changed. If you notice the golf swing, Tiger was always good at sitting down. So he'd take it back, and then in his transition down, he would sit, and then he would turn you with a really aggressive lower body. And he used to snap that left knee for power, and that's part of why he had to have all those knee surgeries. But he went away from that later, but he still had that really driving lower body. And then if you watch him now, he doesn't have the ability to push off. He doesn't have the strength down there. He doesn't have, you know, the leg just doesn't work that way. And so you'll notice a much higher, much more of a higher body, upper body movement. And so I just think that's not exactly dialed in. And yet when you talk to the guys he played with, you know, Max Homa is just like, it's unbelievable the short game talent he has. It's unreal how the shots that he hits and the creativity and the understanding. And so these guys see it, right? He has it in there. I just don't know if his physical game is going to enable him to do it again at Augusta and get that six green jacket. So expectation wise for me is me and the fans and everybody that loves golf loves seeing Tiger Woods out there. But the expectations are, we just hope to see him out there. I don't think there's expectations that he's going to win. And yet if he does, man, won't that be a story?
Last one for you real quick, Brian. Ludvig Åberg, it was kind of his coming out party at the Masters. He introduced himself to the golf world. How high is his ceiling?
You know, most everyone is suggesting he's the next superstar in the game. It was a year ago he was at Texas Tech playing golf, carrying his own bag. And here he is finishing runner-up in his first attempt in any major championship, let alone the Masters. So super impressed with Ludvig. The kid seems to have all the tools. He's tall. He's got a lot of leverage on that swing, hits it plenty far. He's a guy that I think is there's no ceiling right now. I think he's definitely a player that is, you know, he's won a couple of times already on tour, and I think he's destined for greatness. So, you know, it doesn't bode well for the American Ryder Cup team to add, you know, Ludvig to the European side as he was this year playing for the first time. Think about that. You want to know how good this kid is. Right out of college, hadn't even played in a major championship, and he gets picked by Luke Donald to play on the European Ryder Cup team. I mean, that's the kind of talent we're looking at here, and he's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's special. He's going to have a great career. Look forward to that developing. I also look forward to the next major on the tour, PGA Championship, May 16th through 19th at Valhalla. I'm sure you'll be all over that, and we'll have to catch up with you at that point then again, Brian. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. You got great coverage of the Masters. Always look forward to it with you and Bob, and look forward to the next one.
Yeah, thank you. And then the one we'll be talking about a lot is we're going back to Valhalla, where Rory McIlroy last won his major back in 2014. It's been 10 years. So he'll be the big story. You know, obviously he's been chasing the career Grand Slam at Augusta now 10 years and hasn't been able to get it done. But, Rory will be a big topic coming into Valhalla as well. So, guys, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to talk golf with you. Stevenson, nice to visit with you.
You as well, Brian. Talk to you soon.
That's Brian Taylor, Real Golf Radio, every Saturday, 8 to 10 a.m. right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.